Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this at True Voice with Dr. Fred. Sam, what's happening, bro?
What's going on? Dr. Fred Moss, how are you?
Good. Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, that's the least... Probably the simplest version of a response I've ever heard you make to that statement.
Really? All right.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Expand on good.
Well, let's see. Today I had a couple doctor's appointments, like old guys have. I went to the cardiologist and they did an echocardiogram, and my echocardiogramologist, he told me that it looks good.
Yeah, ticker's working all right.
Yeah, and my heart's working good and dancing and prancing and playing good. And the valves are opening up nicely and it's pumping good. So that's good news.
Doing all the right things, huh?
Seems that way. It's good.
All right.
And then I went to the acupuncturist and he drove some calm into me. You know, that he's got magic fingers and magic needle placements and So he did a lot of pin cushioning with me, lots and lots and lots. And I feel like I'm, you know, pretty solidly grounded generally.
Any new insights coming up for you personally or in the world lately over the past few days since we've last spoke?
Yeah, in the past few days, I've had some Facebook posts talking about just the upward battle of finding gratitude, appreciation, you know, this thing that I say I have or I want or I declare that I want to be generally gracious and appreciate life as a entity at the very least and have that wash over into the rest of my life. It's a beautiful concept. And I feel like I have a fleeting access to it, but how to be really simply like appreciative with gratitude for life in general so that I can maybe reach out to myself and find smiles for no reason. You know, the power of a smile. I've noticed today, this morning I had trouble, last night I had trouble just smiling. I think Alex asked me to smile and I couldn't even muster one up. And it was like, I just could not. I mean, it was just some sort of counter influence that had to be that it seemed so ingenuine, and it would like, it's almost like it was like lifting weights to put my cheeks up, you know? And that is such a made up story. It's such a strange mind cluster, construct. And it seemed so odd that it would be hard to smile, especially when just someone's asking me to do it, you know, like just do it. And it's almost like I could not do it. I really could not. I felt physiologically incapable of smiling. And it was like, what a strange sort of pushback from my own mind that smiling was somehow inappropriate to the time.
Well, I certainly understand that. I'd be curious. I think a lot of people can certainly relate to what you're talking about here, where a smile in certain moments totally seemed disingenuous. And no matter how much we sort of spiritually or philosophically relate to life as something that we should feel grateful for, at all times, theoretically, maybe, or whatever, on some level, we might feel that way. But in some moments, it may just be the most disingenuous act that we possibly can create. And I'm wondering about that. I'd love to explore that a bit. Maybe to not necessarily put you on the couch here personally, but just explore this from a sort of a conceptual and theoretical standpoint, because I think anyone can relate to that. Is it important to have bad days to complement the good days? Is it important to fully embrace the darkness as just as important as the light? I'm just curious. Open question here to explore.
Yeah, well, the question that is not really the depth of the question, because even in a dark day, why is it that it's impossible to smile? Smiling doesn't negate the dark day in any way. It doesn't even put a pin in the dark day. It doesn't diffuse the dark day. One, theoretically, they're unrelated. In fact, you can have a very dark day and should theoretically, I think, and maybe even more than theoretically, since they are not connected at the hip, the having a dark day and not being able to smile are not related to each other. I don't think that they're related to each other. I could see where the default would be if I want to show my emotion that I'm having a dark day, then I would choose somehow to make sure that I'm not waving the flag of a smile because it doesn't actually match the flavor of the dark day. But since the two events are really like completely unrelated to each other, you know, they're two different events coming from two different spheres. The notion of smiling doesn't appear to be disconnected to the notion of having a dark or difficult day. And I could and should, it seems, be able to smile for an entirely different reason. It's not necessarily the barometer of whether I'm having a bright or dark day. In fact, life in and of itself offers a smile as being a possible backdrop for what life is about. When a lot of I think there are a lot of people out there who, the Zen masters or the bodhisattvas of our world, do find a way to smile even when they're talking about the darkest of topics or the darkest of times. Mm. Mm. So there might not be as inherently connected as we think they are, and that is a construct, a mechanistic, formulaic construct that is there for some other reason, so that I can display my sadness or my fear or my discomfort in a way by refusing to smile, not by truly being unable to. Because it's not true that I'm physically or physiologically incapable of smiling at any given moment in my life so far. It's not true. My cheek muscles have worked the whole time.
Right. Yeah.
So I should be able to smile. And yeah, and there's plenty to smile about in the grander scheme of things, including
given. All right. So there's the physiological act of smiling despite any feeling. Theoretically, one could have a piping hot knife jabbed into their body and be in the worst, most excruciating pain, and theoretically still function, make their facial structure function in such a way as to smile with relative ease just by treating it like a bicep workout, for example.
I'm not
however,
sure about that, by the way.
Why? Why does one need to in such circumstances?
Yeah. Here's what I know. Here, I think I have an answer to this question that's interesting. So my wife is lying next to me and she wants, quote, reassurance. And the way she wants that reassurance is for me to softly connect to her, to, you know, to be warm and gentle, perhaps, or to be embracing, or even to perhaps exude satisfaction with being next to her, which a smile would do, or some sort of lighthearted persona would take care of. So it would have an effect on the other people in a way to bring joy to them. So for instance, when you, I remember not so long ago when I posted that big smile, you were like, dude, whatever it's taken for you to smile like this, you should do it more often. Yeah, I remember you saying something like that.
Sure.
It has a positive effect on the people around. Now, the more surprising thing was I came out here at 4:30 in the morning to meditate or to regroup, sat with Valentino and his brothers. And for those of you who are new to the show, do you know that thousands of people come on new every single week? Yeah, we don't always pay attention to these people, but, you know, there's tens of thousands of people who are here on regulars, and we sometimes forget that they're telling their friends who are telling their friends, and there are thousands of people coming onto this show every week who are unfamiliar with who we are. So they may have smiled with what I just said, and that's cool to bring pleasure there. But the surprising aspect of this is that when I mustered up a smile with me alone out here with Valentino, there truly was a physiological shift in my mood as a functional result of that. I smiled and I could feel a lightness or a fullness or a gratitude or an appreciation actually flooding as a function of that particular move. Almost, you know, dare I say, in the masturbatory way, you know, the more one touches their erotic selves, the more they can become aroused, you know, that there's an arousal point that takes place as a function of the physiological act. It felt like shockingly interesting that as I forced a smile, and I did force it out here with my cats, I was able to actually feel the warmth and the tenderness and the appreciation and gratitude that seemingly comes with a smile, even if contrived in its genesis.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I understand that. So this just leads to more questions, of course. Totally can get the way in which the intentional act of smiling, even in a situation which might not necessarily seem to warrant it, can impact one's mood and take one out of the experience that one was sort of maybe unnecessarily dwelling in, whatever that mood might be. I also heard you say something that I just flagged, which was the reassurance that your wife likes to receive from the warmth of your smile. And of course, I think that this is probably true for most people in relationships. Their significant other would love to see them smile and reassure them and comfort them. And then there's a part of me that wants to play devil's advocate and say, okay, well, is that actually your job to reassure someone else when you are in the midst of a moment that is feeling, say, for example, somewhat brutal? Is it actual genuine reassurance, or is it a projected reassurance? And who are we to reassure anyone anytime?
So I get that. And that's certainly, I'm aware of that dance as well. And it is a beautiful juxtaposition that you're bringing to the conversation. You know, this idea, it's sort of like the anthem of the "I'll feel the way I fucking want to feel" guy. You know, "I'll feel the way I feel, and that's the way it is. If you can't manage it, then get the fuck out of my way." You know, and if it's not for you, my job is not to be feeling in any certain way in order to address how you want me to feel. You wanting me to feel is barely a feature of why I should feel the way I do.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to a certain degree, I mean, the way that you expressed it indicates there's a certain amount of egoic attitude behind it, which I'm not necessarily suggesting would be present, but simply the allowing oneself to have full access to the full range of emotional dispositions without feeling as though that there is a pressure outside of oneself that they have to conform to help someone feel differently, which is different from saying fuck you, I'll feel the way I want to feel. You can go fuck yourself. You take care of yourself. It's more of a, what I'm suggesting doesn't necessarily suggest that there is an egoic attitude that accompanies it, but rather the willingness to be in a space of darkness simply to respect that phase of the mood that might need, where there might, we spoke about rabbit holes the other day, it, like that the darkness might actually be a necessary component to go all the way through without feeling as though you need to get out of it for someone or something, so as to reach whatever the conclusion of that emotional cycle is that reveals maybe a wisdom or an insight that might be prematurely abandoned through not fully allowing the darkness to
well,
be
again,
as it is.
This is so the interesting juxtaposition here, or the interesting equation that I would challenge, and I almost feel odd challenging you this far down the particular rabbit hole we might be in already, which is, what if one can continue to go down that rabbit hole as deeply and genuinely and authentically as possible, and still carry on wearing a smile? What if wearing a smile does not diffuse that experience at all? And in fact, it's sort of like, you know, just how one presents with another person in order to keep decorum or peace or camaraderie or unification or partnership, or, you know, like, what if they are not as intimately attached? The feeling of darkness and deep unknown rabbit hole and wearing a smile are not nearly as intimately attached, that wearing a smile does not necessarily diffuse the extremely negative vibrational experience, or the extremely uncomfortable, or the extremely dark, or whatever word you want to use there, vibrational experience that going down that rabbit hole induces.
And now, in this example, does the smile serve some sort of utilitarian purpose? As something that is supposed to be complementing the experience of the darkness, and maybe is there a reason for the smile? Is the question that I have in this particular context that you are bringing? I understand in theory. Okay, I can see that in theory. I could see smiling even in the darkest, most fearful, most uncertain and harsh and potentially dismal projections that the imagination is creating, and smiling throughout the whole experience. I can understand that possibility in theory. Is that something feels inconsistent between the tone of the experience that we're describing and the smile that would accompany it? And so in that case, would not necessarily be the true expression of the individual. And of course, we're here on True Voice Podcast. Would that actually be a representation of truth? Or would that be somehow believing that there needs to be some sort of spiritual bypass or something that is accompanying an otherwise valuable dark experience to be had in its completeness?
Great question. So I think that this spiritual bypass question is another cut, I think, into this. So what is a smile? Does a smile in that setting represent a spiritual bypass, or does it in fact represent potentially the exact opposite? A spiritual enlightenment, that there's gratitude for every piece of life including the miserable and the negative vibration? Might it not be a bypass, but in fact, a direct hit at full-scale enlightenment, that smiling is available even in the throes of what otherwise appears to be a very difficult experience or thought process, like whatever it is that has you feeling down and in pain emotionally. Maybe smiling isn't a bypass or a diffusion of that. Maybe smiling is in fact, a deeper dive in, that one can smile at sort of the beauty and the lightness of being that exists inside of the meanness of the world. Like this is just part of that Brazilian steakhouse salad bar.
Mm.
Okay. I think that's really becomes the question. Is smiling a spiritual bypass in that setting, or is it a spiritual leap in towards enlightenment and not at all bypass, but representative of a greater sense of groundedness than what's there if you have to walk around with your big ass frown?
And then what constitutes spiritual bypass, I suppose, is the next question. How do we define that? Is it even a definable term? Or is this something that is a subjective type of experience which we can relate to in the abstract that we may not be able to truly define?
Well, I think you probably have access to the definition of spiritual bypass even more than what I'm about to kickstart, which is something like not paying attention, like in spiritual bypass, I sort of get that one chooses to take a detour around the purity of what otherwise might be a super uncomfortable experience. Mm-hmm. Like, using a paved detour where there might be a rocky road of unknown discomfort.
Previously, it's through some sort of self-deceptive internal dialogue.
A self-deceptive internal dialogue. Well said. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a spiritual bypass rather than what I'm speaking to, which is on the back end of all human experiences sits a smile, sits a grace, sits an acceptance, sits a gratitude, mm-hmm. On the back end of all human experiences, no matter how seemingly rocky or uncomfortable or traumatic or miserable they may be in their form.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's really the question here. Is this a side road, or is it the ultimate outcome through the middle, all the way through the sort to source?
Right, right. I think it's a very nuanced sort of conversation that certainly justifies examining whether there's judgment that accompanies the experience, that there is a good, bad, wrong, right experience to be having, and that maybe an experience of deep pain somehow suggests that there's something of less value than an experience of pain accompanied by a smile of acceptance, that somehow there is a higher, more spiritual way of having an experience other than to have the experience in its purest, rawest form. And that opens up a whole other sort of philosophical can of worms here.
Valentino, come on over here.
You can ask the cat.
Yeah. Come on, Valentino.
Cat, Valentino being the wisest amongst us. And yet, how frequently is he smiling? I'm curious.
That's an interesting point. The cats don't have a smile, and that's what sometimes makes them so funny. And I will say this, because I think our audience, especially our regulars, are certainly aware that you, for instance, always have, underneath it all, a shit-eating grin. Always, 100% of the time. no matter what you're talking about, no matter what level of pain you're talking about, or what level of enlightenment, or what level of exploration, there is always a grin of appreciation that sits behind. Like, you can't help it. I have never seen you. Well, maybe not never. Maybe never is a little too large, but it's in the single-digit percentage of time that I've ever seen you truly appear through and through to be unhappy and frowning, rather than at least shitting and grin with appreciation for the breath, the next breath you're taking.
I do enjoy a good plate of shit. Yeah.
And with him enjoying a good plate of shit, let's play the next commercial here, because that's a good plate of shit. Thank you, TJ. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Fred again. I wanted to explain to you a little bit about one of the names I have called the Undoctor. What is the Undoctor? Well, after about 15 years in the field of me being misaligned with what I was doing, because I was medicating people even knowing that medications were not the right answer, and I was diagnosing people even though I didn't always believe that they had the diagnosis that I said that they had, even though they did meet the criteria, etc., I like seeing humans for exactly who they are and who they're not, and not as a diagnosis. So in 2006, I began the process of becoming the Undoctor. I unmedicated, undiagnosed, and then undoctrinated a bunch of people. Like, people no longer had to come to a psychiatrist because their condition's clear. This isn't true for everyone. It may not be true for you, but for some folks who know that their diagnosis doesn't fit and who know that they don't want to keep going through with medications and don't want to be seen as someone who's defective or afflicted, this turned out to be a great intervention. Over time, I stopped doing that, and I no longer do a whole lot of conventional psychiatry. Now I just help people walk through their life and find their true voice. I connect with people straight up, not as if there's a power gradient between a doctor and a patient, but it's two humans connecting and resonating with each other. As it turns out, that's where all healing emanates from. So today, I've developed the Welcome to Humanity brand over the last 6 or 7 years, and that really takes into consideration all of this. It is self-explanatory. Basically, each and every experience that we have with humanity is just as exquisite as another, even if it's deeply uncomfortable. From there, we get to actually share these human experiences. From there, we get to resonate and connect, and from there, healing takes place. I also have been helping people with their true voice, and that's why you're here today at True Voice with Dr. Frey. I help people find that true voice, really their authentic self, their core value system, and then deliver it effectively into a world that is eagerly awaiting to hear you. Without your voice, no one will ever hear you. And without your true voice, no one will ever know you. But with your true voice, you can find healing, peace, and love. True voice is what it takes to end all wars. So, welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred. It's a pretty interesting conversation, you know. This idea of spiritual bypass versus spiritual enlightenment.
Well, yeah, and I think that we see a whole lot of that these days in the world. You know, present company not necessarily excluded. I think I've had my fair share of moments of spiritual bypass, and I think we see it so frequently in this culture, this kind of sort of step up and think optimistically and have positive thoughts, and you know, that's all you need to do. There's this kind of superficial pop psychology that infuses most of the the certainly the world that we play in terms of success coaches and wellness coaches and this and that. There's a lot of nonsense that gets perpetuated, and it's almost a race to the most trivial kind of hyperbolic types of statements that somehow people pass off as being somehow connected to some deeper truth, and then buy into it as some kind of a psychological marketing scheme. And I find it abhorrent and very irritating. And frequently it seems to have the agenda of doing nothing more than stroking one's ego and making a lot of money. And, and I dislike anything that has such a superficial agenda, especially when it comes to, you know, the very nature of being a human being. I think that it can sort of perpetuate a certain type of psychological or spiritual gaslighting that that is very, very prevalent in the world. And you know, sometimes I wonder if I'm driving myself crazy based on the types of messages that we are receiving from around us all the time, thinking, is this really it? Is this the depths that we are going to really swim in as a society? Because if so, we've got a big wake-up call coming.
I think we do have a big wake-up call coming. I think that's fair to say. And a couple things come to mind. Recent interactions include somebody at one of our most recent meetings where you and I were attending, who concluded for us in a seemingly inarguable fashion. What did he say? Something like, what feels good, or what feels good is good. What feels bad is bad. You know, there's something like that's like, you know, our job is to feel good. Why would you choose feeling bad if you had a choice of feeling good or feeling bad? And there's, you know, there's something about that that seems inarguable and sensible in the world of, I always want to feel good. And therefore, I want a coach or a guide or a mentor who can offer that to me, that there's a paved way to feeling good more often than I do now. And that will be the measure, the metric of success of our interaction, is that I will feel better more often, or I will feel better, deeper, more genuinely than I do now before getting the coaching, mentorship, or guidance that another person might bring me. So, and that good is better because feeling good by definition is better than feeling bad. So,
right.
So that's it. And, you know, but if you pay attention to what you're speaking of here, there are some very dark things that are going on with a couple of my clients, extremely dark. And I'm left with, as their coach, really an existential concern about whether I'm here to just acknowledge the pain and suffering they're going through as sort of representative of this is it. This is part of the pain and therefore part of the beauty of pure life, simply by being raw and real, versus doing whatever I can to offer a hand and take them closer to comfort. Now, the thing is that we talk about maybe with spiritual bypass here, this might be a spiritual bypass conversation too, because I think that the masters might suggest that once one becomes aware of the notion that this is it, that the purity and rawness of coming to grips with one's experience does bring the ecstasy coming from a different realm of what it means to be alive naturally, by just simply coming to grips with all the pain and glory that is going on simultaneously in our worlds, that the outcome of really facing straight down the main street of what's so is the pathway to sheer enlightenment, even when it is pain and suffering or bad or wrong or or you know, or whatever level of terrible, that if one doesn't do that, that in fact is not spiritual bypass. That's sort of the pathway down Main Street to spiritual enlightenment. Valentino. And that the pathway that a coach might offer is the bypass, that I can help you feel better because, you know, it could be worse. You could be a child in Darfur. You could be, you could have lost more, or, you know, smoke some weed, or, you know, something that have you feel better now. And like offering a way to get a fast track to comfort in the face of something that is otherwise uncomfortable might also represent a deep form of spiritual bypass that might be what you're rejecting in your conversation about our modern coaching and guidance industry that seems to be more focused on you can be richer, better, different, you know, you can be bigger, better, badder if you have conversations with me, you know.
Sure. And I don't want to suggest that I believe that there is not such a thing as transmuting pain and suffering into something that is helpful and useful and enlightening and all of that. However, I think many people are too quick to try to point to the solution through various different ways of, you know, say doing gratitude journals or waking up at a certain time in the morning or getting more sleep or, you know, whatever it is, versus honoring that the escape itself only then contributes to more escapism, that there is always going to be a duplicitous type of mindset that accompanies that tendency, that if I can, that it might be helpful to bring my head up above water, but ultimately the only way to the freedom is through the suffering, through, and I mean, if you look at every great religious or spiritual teacher, from Jesus Christ to the Buddha, they're all speaking to the same thing, essentially, which is being in the immersion of the suffering, and that the enlightened state, like you put it well, you said it sort of emerges from a different domain, that there's a new domain opens up that is not something that one just finds a quick fix to or whatever, but something that has to do with actually full acceptance of the suffering as it is, a full embrace of the suffering, not in some sort of masochistic manner, but in the spirit of being so present to what is happening and getting that there is no way out of what is happening, that the only thing that can be done is the transmutation of energy through being with it, being with the discomfort, until the discomfort gets so welcomed that it loosens its grip on the psyche. I was talking with a mentor of mine earlier today, and she said she was just having this moment where she said, "Sam, I really feel that one of your great assets is your willingness and ability to be with suffering," which is a very different type of thing than a lot of coaches, mentors, etc., self-help gurus suggest. Just being with it without trying to escape the experience.
Right.
And there's something to that that I think is very interesting. You know, I think we've spoken of this before. One of the things that I love about blues music is the contrast between the raw, genuine suffering and the light of transmutation that it can imply as well, that you can both be with the suffering and that the music itself is it's in essence a celebration of the suffering versus a denial of it. And I think that we could maybe use a little bit more of that real sort of raw, bluesy perspective in the current world versus this sort of materialistic endeavors to somehow transcend suffering and pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah, endeavors to transcend suffering, I think, properly translates into endeavors to sidestep suffering, or to, you know, bypass suffering, detour suffering. And there's no, I think what you're suggesting, and I think I resonate with this, is that one cannot find a value at the highest level if one is compensating for what it is that you're seeking to find value from. So this is, that's the thing, is that if you're already, if you're working to transcend by, in fact, detouring around or bypassing or, you know, sort of sidestepping, then the ultimate outcome will not be transcendence, because the domain that you got created was a compensatory domain in its first place. And so the value at the end spot will not represent a value of a bell ringing, resonating, enlightening experience, because it's not going down that path, frankly. Now, the other path that you're talking about, this path down, like being present to suffering and being exquisitely present all the way through, so that, yes, you can come up for air, but the magic is down there below. You know, the magic is by being present inside of the experience of drowning or suffocating or whatever it is that feels like you need relief. I agree with your mentor that you're a champion at that. And my next question, just rolling back to the start of this podcast, isn't there a smile waiting for you there at the end road of that? Isn't that a smile?
Sure. I would say that the smile is, while it may not always accompany the journey of the rabbit hole, perhaps there's, whether or not there's actually a physical smile happening in that rabbit hole of allowing that suffering to be there, I think the smile is a recognition of, yeah, this is true. This is true.
Right.
In a world of bullshit, in a world of, and that's, to me, that's how valuable truth is we are so inundated by conditioning and impressions and all of the messages about who we should be, we need to be, we could be, etc. From all around us, those messages are happening all the time. And to actually know and to have this sense, this real gnosis, that this is actually an honest experience in the midst of an otherwise totally full of shit world of messages that we receive, there's something so gratifying about that, that it elucidates a different type of smile. It invokes a different smile inside of me, more like a recognition that there is still purity at a soul level within me that is something that I haven't forgotten.
Exactly. Now, this is a beautiful, of course, that was beautifully well said. And I'm going to suggest that when I was out here at 4:30 in the morning and pulled off that smile that was seemingly out of the blue, that I got a taste of an experience that resonates with this last explanation of yours. It actually showed up as, this is the deal. That this is not just a smile so I look good for Instagram. It has nothing to do with that.
See, now we're talking. This is what where we had to get in this conversation for me to really be able to fully get behind and fully grasp where you're coming from. Because without this explanation, I would be left wondering if that smile was coming from a place of judgment or conditioning versus that authentic touching upon that genuine light within that has never been harmed and that cannot be harmed and cannot be conditioned, and that the smile was a recognition that that is still alive and well.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I'm going to say that I drove by. You know, that's what I'm going to say that I fluttered up against. That's what I'm going to say I flickered with in that smile. And somehow even that becomes intolerable to sustain. It's fleeting. There's something unfortunately fleeting, even though the beauty of it is so extraordinary. We would both agree that this last minute or two, speaking to this, the light at the root of the source of what it all is, in the reality of honest reality of what life's experience is, would seem like it's exquisite enough that we should be able to grab it, embrace it, package it, and just deliver it as a way of being, because what's more beautiful than that light? But it's unfortunate, almost like you and I have talked about in the ketamine experience, it's unfortunate that brushing up against an experience of that level of magnitude of gorgeous beauty does not in any way, shape, or form translate into me being naturally able to contain it and then deliver it as a regular way. Like this thing that you just spoke of lives in all conditions. There are no conditions of the world where this light doesn't live. It has not been harmed and cannot be harmed and will not ever be harmed. That's what we're talking about. So it lives in its own realm, outside of the realm of misery or threat. And if it's containable or sustainable in any way, I would wish me, who thinks that I make proper cost benefit analyses of my decision making as I go through life, I would hope and wish that I could bring that into my everyday world and have that be the heartbeat of my existence in the background, you know, so that I could be that light or shine that light consistently through all experience. But what I'm speaking to when I say that it's difficult to even contrive a smile, when my wife asked me, my wife would be flipping out positively. This is what she wants me to get. This is what she wants me to represent. I'm quite sure this is a fine source of a smile. And she would want that not only for herself, but because it does shine a light on all of life if you start experiencing this. And, you know, who I was at 4:30 when I pulled off that seemingly contrived smile was bringing this up from the phoenix, like actually having this dust itself off and get a taste of a flavor of what it is in this sort of indestructible light of the beauty of life with all bells and whistles of appreciation and gratitude.
The reason why I do what I do with Zen Warrior Training is to practice living from that place that we are describing right now, to practice living from that place of the eternal light and being in it. Because it does take practice. It takes a certain type of attuned attention and a willingness to go to those depths and to be in those depths and to keep recognizing that eternal source of light inside. It takes an especially great amount of practice in the current world we live in, where there's so much bullshit that is being fed to us through social media, through family dynamics, through any number of different sources, which seek to grab our attention away from that eternal spark of awareness where everything is perfectly fine as is, and take our attention away and into some sort of conditioned mental idea of who we need to be, what success looks like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is exactly, on a personal level, why I do what I do with my coaching.
Well, I'd have to say, and we have to get off a little earlier than usual today. I have that event in 8 minutes that I need to be at. Is what a beautiful conversation this has been. We start off with self-proclaimed. This is the power of words and language. And I would also submit that we talked about something that cannot be talked about properly using words or language, and reached a, should I say, a reconciliation isn't really the word, is it's more, it's a complementarity here. We're on a similar enough hand holding arms around each other, arm in arm, walking down this same path of the value of life that the smile that we're talking about actually represents. In, you could almost say, in the big S smile instead of the big S self that we often talk about. The big S, there's a smile that for Instagram, and there's the smile we're talking about here. And the smile we're talking about here is representative of that indestructible light that really represents the greatness and beauty of all that is so, simply because it is so.
Well said. Well said. And while you and I have spoken to the limits of language over and over and over again, there's something about the sincere willingness to grapple with these concepts and principles in an authentic way with someone who will is willing and able to grapple with you. And it's kind of like this verbal and energetic Brazilian jiu-jitsu to get to a point where something emerges from that that is a common understanding and an embodied experience that couldn't have otherwise necessarily been expressed. And through the expression of it, it helps to concretize it.
Fantastic. Well done, my friend. Well done, my beautiful friend. Thank you so much.
Likewise.
All right, Sam, where can people find you?
Sam at zenwarriortraining.com.
That's awesome. And that's a great place to find Sam. He's got lots to say, lots to offer. Don't expect him to make your life any better, though. That's the thing. That is
that's right.
And you can find me at Dr. Fred at welcometohumanity.net. And then I have many other places to be found, but I've been coached to just speak to one. The idea here is that if you'd like to come on my mailing list and receive a newsletter, show up at welcometohumanity.net/creative8. You can get an audio copy of one of my two books, Creative 8, and it'd be my pleasure to stay in contact with you. In the meantime, Sam, arrivederci, adios, shalom, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
Be well, my friend.
Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their True Voice. Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?